This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sherrod Kutin with me, Tan Chung Han, and the top business stories of the day. We continue our discussion, Han, from yesterday about those about a merger between two major banks.
MBank and RHB Bank, both of them have just received approval from the central bank, Bernegara, to commence merger talks. Now, recall that yesterday, MBank and RHB Bank shares were suspended, so we're only 15 minutes away from finding out how their shares will perform. Already in pre-market trade, you've got RHB Bank, which is rising, shares being offered at R5.52, versus the previous close of 2 days ago of R5.39 per share. So RHB Bank rising in pre-market trade, MBank also rising in pre-market trade, being quoted as high as R5.40 per share versus the close on Wednesday of R5.21 per share. So we've got those kind of movements, you know, on the back of this news that the exclusivity agreement between MBank and RHB Bank that will expire on August 30th. So plenty more ways to go in this ongoing development.
So who are the major owners of these banks, and what do they represent in terms of interest?
Okay, so in short, a couple of the big guys that we're looking at will be ANZ, that's the Australian bank, because they are a major shareholder in RHB, and there has been talk about them trying to move out or at least reduce their presence in the Asian Pacific region. Now, they have a substantial stake in RHB Bank, but now that we have news that in MBank, my apologies. So they have a substantial stake in MBank, rather. So now that they're trying to move out, and we've gotten this news from the press release from these banks, that this will not involve any cash, and they made sure that they stressed the point. This potential merger or acquisition will not involve any cash. It'll be a share sale. So then question marks are now being posed about, well, is it even worth ANZ to exit this if they're not going to get cash?
Also, we have, for both banks, a common shareholder in the EPF.
Yeah, and so this goes back to something that you raised very rightly yesterday. Essentially, you know, what does this do for the man on the street? Now, it depends on how you skin this cat, right? If let's say you are a current staff member at either RHB or MBank, and I know this is speculative here, but generally, when you talk about M&A, generally it is often associated with job cuts as well. So that's something to consider. Shareholders will also have to see, you know, whether there's a dilution on their front. But at least from what we can gather so far, again, this is very much a developing story. We have to find out between now and August 30th. But the EPF looks to be a clear winner, because if this merger goes through, you know, then the EPF would be the largest stakeholder in this merged entity. And hopefully EPF members, you and I, we can then stand the benefit from the earnings that are passed through to the EPF.
You know, we've been talking a lot about China's financial infrastructure, the integrity of its system. But, you know, 20 years ago, didn't we all have a shock? The Asian financial crisis kind of reminded us of the need to get our financial architecture right, soon after that we of course had, you know, that exercise in major consolidation of banks. Is this just part of that same thinking?
Yeah, no, certainly, because back some 20 years ago we had 58 financial institutions. And now we've got 8 domestic banking groups in addition to about some 18 or so of foreign banks that are represented here. But there has been this ongoing call for consolidation in the banking space. Now, RHB is taking another stab at this pie. Like, I think more famously, you know, from 2014, there was a proposed merger between RHB, CIMB, and MBSB. Long story short, that did not go through. So again, that same kind of risks, does present itself. Although, to be fair, the conditions, the environment from when those merger talks were held in 2014 versus now is tremendously different. So, for example, oil prices are down to, say, the cost cuts that RHB has undertaken. They are seen to be a lot leaner now compared to when they had those previous merger talks. I mean, just to kind of give you another indicator, even now you've got the likes of MBSB. and also AFB. I know a lot of acronyms here. They are in merger talks, and I believe the deadline is set for June 21st. So you've got all these goings on. Bank Islam also recently spoke about how there are too many players in the Islamic finance space here in Malaysia, and it needs to be consolidated as well. So there's plenty of such calls going on.
But what about the question of so we talk about losers just now. You mentioned bank workers, perhaps because typically with mergers and acquisitions, though this is not necessarily true, typically you have job losses. What about winners? Is there a clear winner if this comes to fruition?
Yeah, well, I mean, so I guess again from the consumer standpoint, if this merge ban goes through, while you may have fewer retail branches to walk into, but at least that the merged bank's financial standing is a lot stronger. Their asset size will be bigger as well, and they can give the other big three, like the Maybanks, CIMB, and Public Bank, perhaps another run for their money. And say again, if you look at the shareholders' perspective, then EPF stands to gain, and hopefully that will translate down to us EPF members.
Okay, we move on to the question of Forex, and because it's seen as Forex speculators or foreign currency speculators is seen as bad hats in the global financial system.
Yeah, and actually, if I can do a bit of self-promoting here, on the back of my business card, because we have the BFM acronym, mine actually says Blame Forex Manipulators. It depends on how you want to translate that, but BFM.
Oh, really? On message, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, thanks. But okay, so looking at the ringgit, for example, right now we have got some live prices now holding just under 4.29 ringgit to the US dollar. Now this is quite substantial compared to the 4.45 ringgit, or at least the near 4.45 ringgit level that we saw a few months back. But if you look at say the month of May, we were Asia's biggest gain. Just revise those numbers there. We saw a gain, a substantial gain against the US dollar, at least in terms of all these Asian currencies. Now, so there's this article in Reuters talking about perhaps the whys. And one big factor for the ringgit's rise is because of the foreign fund inflows that we've been seeing of late. For example, if I use MIDF researchers' numbers, looking at the equity space, that's Malaysian stocks, you have seen 16 consecutive weeks of net buying by foreign investors of Malaysian stocks. I think year-to-date inflows are about 2.3 billion ringgit. So in other words, foreign investors are net buying Malaysian stocks. Looking at, say, Malaysian bonds. So looking at the Malaysian bond space, you've got Bank Negara's figures showing that after that massive outflow that we saw in the last quarter of last year, whereby we were seeing the foreign holdings of Malaysian bonds falling to multi-year lows. By April of this year, just a couple months ago, about 10% of the money that went out has come back in. So it goes to show that the headline there, Malaysia is slowly winning the battle against forex speculators. That seems to be gaining traction there. I mean, also, if you look at, say, foreign reserves, that has been making some gains. Now, granted, we are still below that $100 billion psychologically important mark. We went down to the low 90s. Recent numbers now are about 97. So we're making some ground back towards that $100 billion mark. So slowly and hopefully more surely, we'll see.
Okay, talk about silver linings and rankings. We've had several rankings part of our discussions, or at least one, which is about global competitiveness. Mm-hmm. This week, we now also have one on global peace. And the question is, drum roll, please. Where do we lie? Has our ranking improved or declined?
Let's start with the context. First place, Iceland, and down at the bottom of these are over 160, or in 163rd, I believe, that's Syria. Oh, sorry, 161st, that's Syria. Malaysia in 29th. So we are among the top 30 most peaceful countries. This is according to the Institute of Economics and Peace. Now, just to kind of put things in perspective here, say the U.S., they are at number 114 in the world's peace index. So US 114, we at number 29.
I wonder if, you know, involvement in global conflicts also changes your rankings, because the US is involved in several conflicts overseas. But, you know,
you're right. Yeah, I mean, because if you go through the document, again, you can go check it out at visionofhumanity.org. You can get the full report there, dozens and dozens of pages, you know, and there'll be maybe some good weekend reading for you, Sharan.
You know, what's interesting is that, you know, the market has, and market analysts have, the VIX, right, which is the volatility index. This is because it's market volatility, not political volatility. But, you know, and it's been pretty low, right? The volatility index has been pretty low. Mm. But globally, we see a lot of, you know, we see a lot of conflict. I mean, just in the Philippines over the last week or so, the siege of Marawi City that continues there. But how does something like the Global Peace Index impact the market, I guess, is what, investor sentiment, perhaps?
Perhaps investors can look at the results from this index and see, have some degree of certainty when it comes to the investment climate or the, you know, economics, environment in these locations or these economies that they are investing in. Because if you, dissect the results here, you've got, you know, things like they don't just look at the long-term trend, but also short-term trends. They also look at the economic impact of violence. Now, that's interesting. Economic of impact, so you can measure that. There's positive piece and negative piece as well. I know, go figure. So just to give you some numbers here. So the global economic impact of violence came at a cost of $14.3 trillion US dollars in 2016. So there obviously is a cost to violence, and hopefully a positive result for peace. And so Malaysia, you know, 30th, hey, you know, it's maybe something to put a small smile on your face as you drive into the office or into the weekend.
And the weekend for sure. We're coming up shortly to the news bulletin. And after that, we'll have the opening numbers on the stock market and more analysis on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.